Greetings, listeners, and welcome to the WIP 12 podcast. My name is Kepri, and tonight we have a very special guest. I'm interviewing Cobra Prime, the winner of the Tidewater Tempest 2024 satellite event, but I'm sure you all know him already. If you're at any point familiar with the ITS rankings, his name is always there near the top. Welcome, Cobra Prime.
Hi, it's nice to see you. Nice to meet you, and nice to be here.
So, Rob, why don't you tell me a little bit about your Infinity history? Like, did you play other war games? When did you start?
Sure, sort of. So I played 40K a little bit back in 5th edition and 6th edition. But I got into Infinity right around when Human Sphere, not Human Sphere, the campaign back in N3 that came out. I can't remember the name of it now. But I've been playing probably since about 2016, 2017. Time frame, so I'm getting old now. I'm almost 8 years. Seems like forever, but it also seems like just yesterday.
Well, time does fly when you're having fun. Okay, so Tidewater Tempest was held at World's Best Comic and Games in Newport. It was a 3-round event with around 48 players, but most interestingly, it was a resilience operations satellite event. So, like, what was the overall feeling at the tournament? It's Newport, Norfolk, right? Do you know the area well?
I mean, I wouldn't say I know it real well. It's a real Navy town, and I'm a Navy sailor. I was in the Navy for 22 years, but I was never stationed in Norfolk, so I don't really have a lot of intimate experience with it, but I do try and go down there every year for the Tidewater Tempest because those guys are really welcoming, and it's such a great event. I really enjoy it, and they often come up to our events in the Mid-Atlantic region to, they come up to Nova or the Baltimore Brawl. So, you know, we try and bring a good contingent of our people down to Tidewater to support them too.
That's super cool. That's really cool to hear. Yeah. Cause you know, especially the distances being that much longer, right. In the US, than what we're used to here in Europe. Right.
Oh yeah. It was about a 3.5, almost 4-hour drive to get down there, but that's not really that far here in America. So, we can do that on a weekend or down for a 1-day tournament without really breaking a sweat.
Awesome. So, resilience operations. What do you think about that? Were people excited to try a resilience operations tourney?
Yeah, a lot of us, it was brand new. I know I myself hadn't played any games of it. We got one practice tournament in 2 weeks before the Tidewater event in preparation for it. But that was my first experience with it. I hadn't even really read the operations in the book because I didn't want to color my perception of it, you know, by trying to theory craft how things would work until I tried it out to see how it really worked, right? And I really, really like it. It is a lot of fun. And I highly recommend that everybody give it a try, right? I think it may be the future of Infinity. I mean, I don't foresee it overtaking the ITS missions as a whole, but I definitely think it has a solid part of the mission lineup or the mission or event lineups for the future. I think it is way better than Reinforcements was, right? Like, Reinforcements kind of fell flat on its face. I didn't like it very much. Resilience Operations is the exact opposite. It was a blast.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I've played a couple of games of Resilience Operations and I love it as well.
Yeah, it is really good.
It I don't know why. It's easy to theory about how, you know, this is not balanced or that is not balanced, but when you actually go out and play it, it's a damn lot of fun.
It is, yeah. And there are certainly cards at events that are, you know, better or worse than the others, but the fact that it's entirely random on the day and at the moment, right? It really brings everything together and makes it a fun experience.
Yeah, that was another one of my questions. Like, were there any adjustments made to the format for the tournament? I mean, I know some people have been talking about the TOs drawing the cards for all the tables or other sorts of changes like that.
There weren't. They played it pretty straight. The only real, I mean, I wouldn't call it an adjustment, but the tournament organizer, Bob, he provided for everyone all of the equipment that was necessary. So, like, everyone got 3 consoles and 3 beacons and 3 or 2 turrets and 3 mines. Everything that you would need to play Resilience Operations came in our swag bags, 3D printed versions of all those things. So everybody absolutely had access to it. I think that's the only real thing that that he did special for the event, right? There wasn't any alterations to the rules. We played it straight out of the book. And like I said, I think it went really well. I tried to imagine what it would be like preparing for and playing in an event like this with the cards predetermined. I suppose it wouldn't make a difference if in preparing, right, if they were predetermined at the same time, all at the event, because you'd still have to build your lists the same way. But like predetermining the lists prior to the event and publishing them, much like a mission list would be published in advance, I think that would really change the dynamic of how people prepared for that event, because you could actually build lists specifically for those missions. And I think we already have that dynamic with the regular ITS event. So, I haven't tried it, so I don't know how it would go. But I don't think it would be quite as much fun. It's part of the enjoyment is the dynamic nature of never knowing what you're going up against.
Yeah, I think you really hit the nail on the head there. We're very accustomed in the ITS mode of thinking to build your lists in advance, tailored to the missions that you're going to face, right? And Resilience right. Ops does flip that on its head. You do have to build a list that can more or less do any of the cards. But then I have another question there. Some of the criticism that I've heard from people who don't like Resilience Operations is that since it does not require any specialists, you can basically just play it as Annihilation.
You know, that is a valid concern, right? And I think a lot of Infinity and a lot of concerns with the way Infinity has been going recently is that specialists become less and less necessary in mission sets, then you can just go all in on killing, right? And that does kind of work for Resilience Operations. But part of the aspects, part of the core of Resilience Operations is that not only do you not know what you're going to get, but you don't know what your opponent's going to get either, and you still don't throughout the game, right? So killing your opponent's models is almost always a good idea. But honestly, in Infinity, killing your opponent's models is always going to be a good idea, regardless of what mission you're playing, as long as you don't put them into retreat and as long as you don't forget to do the mission. And being able to sort of, you know, mind game your opponent or trying to figure out what your opponent's goals are is sort of an important aspect of Resilience Operations. And just killing all their guys, while it might work, it may not be the most optimal way to go about accomplishing your missions and preventing them from doing theirs. So while I think it is definitely a valid concern, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, right? Like being able to fight and play games that are, you know, mostly an expression of your tactical combat skill rather than your mission accomplishment skill is still a fun way to play the game.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. That's super interesting. Yeah, because another one of the criticisms that have been, you know, levied at Resilience Operations is the fact that you don't know your opponent's missions, right? I've heard a lot of people suggesting that it would be better for the missions to be open information, for each person's missions to have open information. But I see that you feel differently. So what is your thought about that?
I mean, it's playing a different game, right? Like having all of the missions open information means that you know exactly what you have to do to stop your opponent. And you know what you have, your opponent knows what they have to do to stop you, and you know exactly what you're going to have to do to accomplish it at the same time. But imperfect information is part of warfare, right? So it seems more immersive and realistic to not necessarily know what your opponent's going to be doing. And I think that that's a cool thing, right? Like, it's not necessarily balanced, and it's not necessarily like the most... Like, if you want a purely competitive environment, right, that could add some skew into the mix. But it's fun, right? Like, trying to figure out what your opponent's doing while trying to prevent your opponent from figuring out what you're doing, it's fun. I mean, I like it. It's part of the game that I enjoy.
I really like how that sounds. I completely agree. I guess we shouldn't try to optimize every bit of fun out of the game we love, right? I also love the amount of thought that went into hosting the tournament. I mean, the organizers really thought through a lot of the details. The whole welcome pack idea with the objectives and everything, that was super cool. Mm-hmm.
that was super cool. Nice. Yeah, it was great. The only thing that we didn't have provided for us was HVTs, but you know, part of Infinity nowadays especially is that the HVTs are kind of a cool way to, you know, bring your own flavor to the table. So being able to provide all those HVTs on your own is kind of neat because, you know, you get to paint up cool HVTs, and CB has been making a bunch of new HVTs specifically for that purpose. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is, HVTs are for sure like the one thing that every Infinity player has. Like, they're required right. in almost every ITS mission. You mm-hmm. do get them like in the big collection packs and in the dire foes. People won't look at you badly if you use other minis which you think are cool. You know, it's not a big deal. I think it's safe to assume that you have HVTs. It's the rest of the stuff that's a little bit harder, right?
Yeah, it is. And them providing that for us was really great. And now I have it. So anytime I go to a resiliency operations tournament again, I'll just take that with me.
That is very, very cool. Very nice welcome pack right there. So TOs, think about it.
Yeah, if you have access to people who like 3D printing and are very enthusiastic about it, then, you know, tap into them and try and get them to print you some stuff for the events.
Oh, yeah. Well, wherever you have people who love minis, there will probably be people close by with a 3D printer. Yeah. So that's been my experience, at least. I want to get into like how you build for resilience operations and mm-hmm. and that more of the strategic things. But before we do, I also wanted to ask, would there be any, now that you've played a full tournament with resilience ops, mm-hmm. would you change anything? Is there anything that you think would make for a better experience, or I don't know?
I don't think so. I'd really have to try it a couple more times to see all of the variations in play. Because like I said, it was pretty new. I've only played, you know, 6 rounds total of resiliency operations. So I've only seen specific, you know, mix-ups of the cards and specific cards themselves. There were some that never came up. Like, I never played at night, right? There were some that were a little bit more difficult than others. I know in one of my games, we played one of them wrong. So that provided me with a different experience than, like, I would expect to have the next time, right? I think the one that we played wrong, it was the one where you select 3 models and then you have to try and kill those models. My opponent had the card and he selected the 3, which, you know, he picked 3 that I would want to use. So it was very difficult for me to protect them while also wanting to try and use them to fight with. And that's a very different experience from me picking 3 that I want to hide, which is the way the card's supposed to be written. And so I don't have the experience of playing it the right way. So I wouldn't want to judge whether that is too harsh or not, because reading it and thinking about it, it seems like it would be really hard for my opponent to do that, to be able to come and find 3 specific models that I've selected. Right. But doing it the other way was a very interesting dynamic, because I ended up having to hide some of my key attack pieces and not use them. So it was really kind of fun actually having to figure out ways to protect the pieces that I would normally be going out and killing stuff with.
That is an interesting tactical challenge. I mean, it's like, I would like, maybe we could call that the Cobra Prime handicap or something. Like, if you get that card.
Yeah, I suppose so. That's a good way to put it. He selected 2 of my shooters and 1 of my Pupniks. So I couldn't use my Uberfall Commando. I had to try and hide the Uberfall Commando to prevent him from killing my Pupnik. Oh, wow. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's really cool. Let's move into talking about the lists you took to Tidewater Tempest, right? I have here in front of me Tidewater 1. This is a Bakunin list, and we have a Rounder Red Fury in the first group, an Orphan with a multi-spectral revisal level 2, that's the one with a multi-marksman rifle, a Moderator Paramedic, and I'm guessing these form a Harris?
Yes.
Okay, so you have a paramedic and two good guns, right? A marksmanship, Red mm-hmm. Fury, and MSV2, Mimetism -3, multi-marksman rifle, all in the medium range bands. Then we have a Chimera with 3 Pupniks, Reverend Custodier Lieutenant Hacker, Hacking Device Plus. This, she also has a picture. Mother Agatha with a Vulcan shotgun. Moira with a multi-sniper rifle. And two Cenobites. One of them, the heavy rocket launcher, and the other one with a chain rifle. And the heavy pistol plus one burst.
I think in my lists for the event, Den McConnelly, who's the next one on the list, who's in the first one and the second group, was actually in that top group. Somehow must have dragged it down there before I saved it.
So let's move it up. But, so we've also got Denma in the first group to throw some smoke. Okay, and then the second
makes that a full 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes it a full 10. The second group, we have two Morlocks, with one of them with the assault pistol and the other one with the EMCC weapon. Gives you both angles of attack. Zero with EM mines and deployable repeater, Uhahu. That's another pitcher and a good hacker, and another Morlock with the EMCCW. Okay, so this tell us a little bit about the list.
So if I were to do it again, that last Morlock would become a Zellenkrieger FTO, which is two more points, and I had 2 points just floating. Because at the time, I hadn't played Zellenkrieger, and I didn't realize that they were just flat-out better than Morlocks. But were I to do that again in the future, I would definitely replace at least one of those Morlocks with the Zellenkrieger FTO, because getting the additional CC burst using the heavy pistol plus one burst, getting the additional template weapon with the Pulsar plus one burst, and getting a reroll on metachemistry is definitely worth 2 points on a model that's designed to go out and kill stuff. So.
Right. Makes sense.
The meta for Infinity right now is very, very strongly go first, win, right? And I personally don't believe in that philosophy. I'm very much prefer to choose deployment, watch my opponent place their models, and then counter deploy, and then take on the first turn offensive from a position of strength, right? I think the strongest you ever are in Infinity is at the very beginning of the game. The best deployed you will ever be is at the beginning of the game, when you have time to set up your models exactly the way you want them. And so, in my opinion, the weakest you will ever be is when your opponent has all of their models and they're attacking on the first turn. So I want to face my weakest point with my strongest front, which is, you know, deployment. And chosen deployment. So I prefer to choose deployment on most missions unless there's a distinct advantage to going first. And usually the missions provide an advantage to going second. So that kind of fits in with my general philosophy of playing Infinity. So this list sort of lends itself well to that philosophy. It has some very strong ARO pieces. It's got a multi-sniper Moira with, you know, mimetism minus six and a pure five-man link. A Cenobite with mimetism minus six and a five-man link. A good deal of close-in support. Two hackers to prevent people from just unilaterally dropping pictures of my deployment zone and bombing me out of existence. It's got a trio of good gunfighters that can be run up the board that have a variety of attack options. I've got the MSV2 with multi-marksman rifle, the Red Fury that ignores cover and has MSV1, and then a paramedic to get them up if either of them goes down. And then, of course, I've got the Chimera, which is almost a must play for me in Bakunin. It's really the reason I play Bakunin is because the Chimera is so much fun. And then a bunch of warbands to allow me to, once I have cleared arrows, run across the board and trade effectively. The Zero with a deployable repeater there is basically there to shut down heavy infantry or tag units and provide avenues of attack for Oahu and my my custodian hacker.
That's very cool. I really like seeing this list. I love to hear you talk about it. So let me take a look at the second list before we go any further down this route.
So for resiliency operations, since you don't know what you're going to be facing, I built very, very similar lists that are very flexible and can do a lot of different things. And I essentially differentiated them by my opponent, right? So my other list is essentially exactly the same, except my Zero, instead of having EM mines and a deployable repeater, is a mine layer. And instead of Uhahu, I have a Mars Spider paramedic, which has both the ability to, you know, be a paramedic and pick people up using his med kit, or shoot a Gizmo Kid, right? In addition to that, so he can provide both of those roles. Get up my my Chimera if she happens to go down since she's structure, or you know, use him as a paramedic. Plus, he's another warband that can go into CC. But other than that, the list is almost identical. And I basically use that one when I'm facing non-hacking armies. I fought Ariadna twice, so it was more appropriate against Ariadna. Whereas heavy hacking armies or things with a lot of heavy infantry or tags, I would prefer to play the Oahu and deployable repeater version.
Right. You know, I hadn't realized that the Mars Spider paramedic had a gizmo kit and a medikit.
Oh, yeah. Super useful, right?
Yeah, that is extremely cool and useful, right? Right. Yeah, so you've got the big pure core, right? With the reverence, and I mean, also Mother Agatha is a beast, right? That you know, you've got her. Oh, this version has a breaker combi. The previous list has a Vulcan shotgun.
Oh yeah. I guess I did have one more difference.
You had to sacrifice a couple of points here or there, right?
Right.
So yeah, I mean, you use her as a later game piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's got that plus one burst med kit by itself, and in a fire team that's burst three on a med kit, which is nearly guaranteed to get somebody up at range, which is pretty strong. So she's a very effective healer by herself. And then she's also, you know, a heavy infantry or medium infantry, so she can do the classifieds that require medium infantry. She can do the special things within resiliency operations that might need that. She's a character, so she counts as a veteran. She's a doctor, so she's a specialist if you happen to need a specialist. She's really good in close combat. She's got mimetism -6. She's a strong gunfighter at BS-13. She's very difficult to kill, which is one of the things that I put a lot of emphasis behind. And she's actually fairly good at killing other things too. I actually prefer the Vulcan shotgun to the Breaker Combi Rifle version, because having that Vulcan shotgun option in a fire team that might end up having to move up the board is really nice to have. But the Breaker Combi is pretty good too. She has a Pulsar on that one. So either way, she's got a large template weapon.
It's scary, right? I think the Vulcan shotgun has that continuous damage, you know, burst three, it continuous does. Damage, it AP. It can get pretty.
And I hate fire.
Yeah, it changes the calculus when you're attacking into something with a fire template. It's you know, you just can't. Yeah. You're not guaranteed to just tank the template and kill them. You know, you're always
right. You can't rely on your armor 6, right? You never know what'll happen.
You never know what'll happen. That's right. It always gets scary. So this is super cool. I mean, you run a bunch of warbands, right? You're running three Morlocks, Denma, and the Uberfall Commando. So that's like five warbands of really good quality, because Bakunin has like amazing warbands.
They do. I'm a big fan of melee combat. I really like CC, and being able to get into CC is one of the joys of Infinity to me. And being in Bakunin, most people run Bakunin for its hacking, but I run it for its hacking.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you have a ton of smoke. I hadn't realized that at a first glance, right? You have like, that's Denma too. So yeah, that's
a bunch of smoke and Eclipse. The option for having Eclipse on the Chimera is very useful. One of the missions at Adepticon this last weekend, I took Bakunin to Adepticon as well, because, you know, I'm on a Bakunin kick right now. So one of the missions was countermeasures. And I think my first turn, I didn't do any damage at all. All I did was smoke up, white noise up, Eclipse up, and get my objectives done quickly so that I can make sure I got some points on the board very quickly. Because, you know, as you can tell, in addition to the smoke and the Eclipse smoke, there's also the opportunity for white noise. So.
That's right. So that's super interesting to me. So you like going second, or more precisely, you know, you like choosing deployment. So if you are given first turn, well, you know, that's the opponent is really putting himself in a bad spot, right? Because you are counter deploying and attacking first. So that's probably extremely unwise to choose against you. I mean, I definitely would not do that.
And I'm perfectly happy to use that Moira Sniper's NCO order to shoot down any opposition and then run my warbands across the table and kill stuff. So,
right. Mm-hmm. But even then, like you were talking about this other game in which you spent the whole first turn doing objectives. You didn't really really kill much.
That's right. Countermeasures. I mean, the whole point of countermeasures, you got to get those cards, right? And if it takes you four or five orders to get to the place where you can do the cards, then that's what you got to do. So,
yeah,
I didn't want to fight the Morat. What was he? The Morat MSV2 guy. So I ran my boss stock up. Mm-hmm. Yep. Cast my white noise spell and did my mission behind it. So it worked very well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, yeah. Countermeasures is a special case too, because those cards mm-hmm. disappear and you really can get a lead. You know, you can run ahead with the cards. So yeah, that puts a lot of pressure on the opponent. So give us a rundown. Though I already think you spoke a little bit about it, but what are you looking for when you build a list for resilience operations?
So a lot of resilience operations, as you've noted earlier, is killing your opponent, right? So being able to kill your opponent and not die to your opponent is a premium, right? So I put in things that are good at trading pieces because I want to be able to kill my opponent while not sacrificing my ability to hold territory, to hold positions, or to protect my beacons or my HVTs or whatever it is that my opponent might be coming after, which means my pieces have to be tough enough to survive my opponent's onslaught. One of the reasons I chose Bakunin for this particular event was because with all their mimetism -6 and their 2-wound cheap heavy infantry models, they have a lot of really resilient stuff appropriate for resiliency operations. And as you've already noted, their warbands are very good, which means I can take a 6-point model, trade it for a 40-point model, and definitely be ahead on that count. If I'm trying to match my opponent for the center zone or the circle in the middle, right? Running a warband in there to kill their 30-point forward deployed model is probably a better bet than trying to outpoint that with a bunch of other things, especially if I need to be using those models to accomplish my other two objectives.
Yeah. Also, resilience has a lot of cards. I mean, off the top of my head, you've got the N domination, you've got the Z domination, you just mentioned dominate the center. There are quite a few mm-hmm. cards that are based on dominating or subjugating, different areas of the board. Mm-hmm. So going second also has a big advantage there, right? I mean, how would you analyze the breakdown of the cards?
So, you've already said it, right? Like a lot of the cards involve controlling something, whether it's controlling your HVT, whether it's controlling a specific area on the board, or whether it's controlling an objective or a beacon. You're basically defending a zone, an area, or a thing. So being able to see is very important, which is why I have both MSV2 and MSV1 in that list, right? And being able to counter things with templates, because a lot of times something can still sneak through your zone using eclipse smoke or white noise as appropriate, or simply just cautious moving into a place that you can't defend against, right? Being able to dodge a warband into base to base with a model that's sneaking into contact with a beacon or sneaking into contact with one of my objectives, right, is a valid way to defend that objective. I also like deployables because it allows you to do things like that. It's one of the reasons I put the 0 in there so that I would have the opportunity to deploy mines in order to protect areas. A lot of resiliency ops is about controlling the board. So having board control in your list is kind of important.
Yeah, I mean, you're running quite a few irregular orders too, but you have no fat in the list, right? Something that just jumped out at me now taking a look at the list is that there are no models here which are useless. There's no Lieutenant Decoy. there are no flashbulb spots. Like, everything here is a killer. It's like, you know, your Morlocks and Zeros and, you know, the Mars Spider is a multi-role unit too. I mean, it's very interesting.
It is somewhat vulnerable to like Lieutenant Assassination or guided assassination, which tends to be common, not really where I come from. I think I'm a big proponent against the guided meta. And I think that's sort of been picked up around here. And a lot of people that we play with just don't use it anymore because it's just not fun. But in general, across the Infinity community, it does tend to exist pretty commonly. So this does have a weakness against that. I mean, I try and protect against it with a strong hacking network, but it's never really 100%. But I am also pretty good at playing from loss of lieutenant or playing with only irregular orders. So that kind of mitigates any damage that might be done by those types of tactics.
That's the other side of the coin. Yeah, your lieutenant is vulnerable to assassination by, you know, pitch your Trinity or guided or however you want to do it. But there are no huge pieces in your list. I don't think that losing anything would cripple it.
Yeah, it doesn't really require being able to Rambo stuff. And since a lot of resilience operations is more about controlling areas and controlling things, you could do that with only one or two orders per model. There's not really a need to have Achilles run across the board and kill everything in a list like this or in a mission like this. And honestly, if somebody wants to spend their time trying to assassinate my lieutenant, that's probably to the good for me, because it means it's not using that time and resources to accomplish the mission, which is the whole point of resiliency operations.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. So I'm one sec. I'm out of smart things to say.
No worries. Yeah, I can't think of anything cool either. So,
all right. So let me see. We've have been, do you want to go through, is there anything you want to talk about the games themselves at the tournament?
So I just got done at Adepticon and I played 11 rounds at Adepticon over the course of 4 days. Oof. So, my brain is pretty mushy.
Yeah.
So I'm not really going to be able to distinguish, like, I'm terrible at remembering the details of games to begin with. So being able to pick out what happened 3 weeks ago, as opposed to what happened, you know, 3 or 4 days ago, is going to be rough. So,
okay. But I think, I've been having a blast. I think the conversation on resilience has been super, super, super interesting. I mean, I'm really happy with what we've recorded so far. So I don't think we even have to go into the tournament at all. Let me just think if there's anything else we could say. But if nothing pops up, I mean, I would probably move on to talking about the IGL and your run with the carry.
Sure, that sounds good. I can't think of anything else to say about the Tidewater tournament either, other than to thank all of the Tidewater folks for being so welcoming to us.
So let's just do that. Let's do the outro of this one, because we might just do a standalone episode about resilience and Tidewater and stuff. So it would be nice to have like an ending for it, and then we can start, if you've got the time for it, we can start talking
absolutely
about IGL.
Yeah, my wife isn't home, so I'm clear.
Great. Great. Okay. All right, Rob. So that's been a fascinating talk. I mean, I've been having a really good time going through resilience, going through your list choices, going through your approach to the game, which is honestly super interesting and super refreshing. Just the whole defensive style was, I mean, I don't know if I've heard many players take that approach. I mean, I'd wager quite not many would be the answer.
Well, I don't know. My record speaks for itself, so I think it works pretty well. And honestly, I think it's fun to do things that way, to be able to. I treat Infinity as a puzzle, right? Where every opportunity for a decision is a choice to make the right decision and try and figure out the puzzle of each game. And I think it's more fun to play that way than to just go around stomping stuff to death. But I mean, that has its place too. It's definitely fun to go kill some stuff on the board. But I like setting up traps and springing surprises and that kind of tactics.
Yeah, the focus on hand-to-hand combat, I think that is wonderful. I mean, it's glorious, man. It's just super fun to actually get your models into hand-to-hand combat. Oh my God.
It's so dramatic too, right?
It is super dramatic, yeah. And it is a little bit swingy, you know? It depends.
It definitely can go. I've had you know, Shinobu crit by a line trooper before. Yeah. I think in the tournament this last weekend, my quasi creature took out three or four models during the event. One of the Steel Phalanx players coming against me got two of his Thrakatai eaten by the quasi creature. I thought it was great. And one of my Flash Pulse bots managed to R2-D2 zap a CC expert. So that was a glorious fight. So you're right. It can be a little bit swingy, but I still think it's worth the squeeze.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a gameplay that also requires a lot, right? It requires a lot of positioning. It requires a lot of planning. You know, it asks a lot of you from you as a player. I think
that's true. Yeah.
Lets you stretch.
Stretches those muscles.
Yeah, stretches mm-hmm. those muscles. Like you throw smoke here and stealth here, and you know all those interactions, all those angles really, really come to play.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, is there anything you'd like to mention about Tidewater Tempest itself?
I do really want to compliment Bob. The event itself was fantastically run. Everything was very smooth. Everybody was super friendly. The facility was great. The prize support was off the hook. Like, it was really, really good. I can't wait to come back next year, and I just want to thank them all for being so welcoming.
Well, you heard it, guys. I'm going to see if I can make it down next year.
Yeah, it'd be great to see you.
It would be a big trip, but it would definitely be fun. I mean, it's the Eastern Coast is much easier for me than the West Coast, mm-hmm. for sure. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed our conversation today, and hope to catch you soon.
It was my pleasure and my privilege. Thank you.